Welcome to the American Market Alchemist podcast and YouTube channel. Christina Robofay brought us here, and I'm very excited to be interviewing Tristan Laurent, who is also here in Grenoble, like I am, and very excited to have you on the episode. Tristan, how are you today?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. So just a little story about how we came into contact. On LinkedIn, I put out a call for entrepreneurs and startups based in the Grenoble area because I want to feature Grenoble and I want to make Grenoble the hot spot to be. So that means really reaching out and telling stories about all of the great entrepreneurs and the companies that are doing exciting things in the U.S. market and who are in or from Grenoble. And Tristan said, "Hey, that's me." And I said, "Great, let's talk about it." And Tristan, can you tell me a little bit just about who you are and what you do? Who's your company? What do you guys do?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So actually, I was born in Grenoble. I did most of my my studies there. Yeah. And then actually my very last year, I went to Kansas to do is kind of a double degree with the University of Kansas. So I did an MBA there. And that's how I got to learn not only how to speak proper English, I guess, but also, met tons of very interesting people and really got into what eventually became not just a passion, but like really my entire career at the space industry. So that was back in 2012, and it was when really kind of the space industry started to get hot with Elon Musk investing lots of millions into SpaceX with the goal of sending people to Mars. And I thought, that's pretty cool, and I want to be a part of it. So that's kind of how it started, and I spent the last 10 years really working in the space industry, mostly out of Europe. In various positions. And then right about 2 years ago, I was kind of having this existential crisis of, okay, I'm the chief commercial officer of this satellite company. I'm selling satellites, but there is this thing going on, which is climate change and specifically global warming. And I was seeing kind of things that I used to be able to do with my father back in Grenoble. You know, we have this mountain close to Grenoble called L'Alpe d'Huez. Yeah. And it was literally like snow was melting like crazy. Yeah. And, I'm a father and I wasn't able to do basically the things I used to be able to do with my dad back then. I thought, if I'm going to sell satellites, I want the satellites to be useful for that specific purpose of containing global warming. And so that's how I went on to create Absolute Sensing with the mission of monitoring and being able eventually to predict global warming events.
Okay, right. No, that's very interesting. And yeah, you're right. I mean, I think when when you're in a region where I want to say outdoor activity is a big part of the way of life, like it is here in Grenoble, and especially with the mountains, like you said, like this winter, I did zero winter sports because it's just like every weekend, I just was like, there's the snow's not very good. I'm just not going to do it. And, like you said, I think especially if when you were a kid, you were having those experiences and those memories with your dad up in the mountains. And now you're like, wow, I can't do that with my son or, my kids because of global warming. I mean, that's like, it makes it really concrete. And you're like, wow, like that's I think that's a lot more powerful than any numbers and statistics or even, maps that we see or pictures that we see of, like the mer de glace, which is, less and less each year. But just saying like, I can't do these things with my kids, which I was doing with my parents.
Hurts. For us still, the impact I would say is, it's kind of leisure, which is, it's not as bad as say you're born in somewhere in Africa and living here, you're seeing kind of, not being able to have access to water, drinkable water. You're seeing thousands of species that are just going extinct, and that kind of really messes up the entire biosphere. And as a result, it's just a lot harder to live and to kind of you're at the lowest level of the Maslow pyramid of kind of, you know, how am I going to get food and drink?
Yeah, food. Right.
So it's also a vicious problem, because like from the moment where you realize it's a problem and you take steps, you take actions, to the moment where you see the positive, the benefits of what you've done, the solution you've implemented. With global warming, it takes, you know, 10 years or more to see the benefits.
Yes.
Of the solution. So it's kind of very tricky in this world where we live in, where it's kind of, you know, we all live on short term stimulus where we want the very quick reward based on actions we take. So if we can contribute somewhat to this problem with absolute sensing, that's really the reason why the company exists.
Yeah, right. No, it's a fabulous mission. And I hope, you know, I just hope you guys have lots of success, because climate change and global warming, it is, I think, the big problem that we're facing now in this century, and that we got one planet. We have to make it work. We don't have a choice.
Exactly.
So yeah, right. Right. So you said that you spent some time in Kansas and in the US. How long were you in the US for?
Well, all in all, it was right about 3 years ish.
Okay.
But I spent one full year in Kansas, close to Lawrence. That's where the Kansas University campus is based out of. And then I spent some time in New York. That was my very first job out of college. And then now, as part of my function with Absolute Sensing, spending quite a bit of time. In DC and Maryland, and then to a lesser extent on the West Coast as well.
Texas also. Okay, right. So very, you know, a lot of different areas in the U.S. From what you've seen, you know, because we often sometimes think, you know, like we talk about the United States and Americans, et cetera, et cetera. But I know that there can be a lot of differences between the regions. Now, this can depend on a lot of things, industry, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just curious to know what differences, if any, have you seen between Kansas, New York, Texas, West Coast, all of that?
Differences between Kansas and New York City. Let's see.
Where do I start? Right.
It's really funny, because it's actually, you know, it's the same country, but really you don't feel like you know, it's the same country. I think the experience very much. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about the people you meet, right? Like,
yeah,
you
sure.
can have a very good experience in any states, really,
right?
And you know, it's really a function of you know, how good the people you meet are with you. And to me, I was really lucky, because you know, no matter in Kansas, I had a great experience. It was very traditional in the sense of, you know, them being very I would say rooted in traditions.
Kansas is really the, you know, what we call the heartland of America. So kind of that very, like you said, traditional. I don't know if we could say typically American, but yeah, more definitely more traditional and perhaps less cosmopolitan than a place like New York or California
For sure. So it was really it was really great. And then in New York, on the other hand, I would say it was very, you know, I used to spend some time in, say, London and Paris. I didn't find it, I mean, of course it was, you know, it was great, but I would say that it was less of a difference in terms of, you know, how people live there and kind of the pace of life. It's still higher pace, I would say, than you know, London and Paris, but it's kind of in that, you know, in that ballpark.
Like just big city life.
Kind of, you know, it's like everything's, you know, running slowly and, but also people actually spend time to do things and build relation. And I really liked it about that. Like, it's just very, they spend time to actually get to know you.
Yeah.
Particularly me as a student coming from France, they have no clue, you know, what in a family kind of, you know, helping me out.
Yeah.
Of weeks, and it was like, okay, how it's like in France, and but a genuine interest in getting to know how it came, you know, what was my background and all of that. It was great.
Yeah. Because I imagine, you know, for example, compared to New York, there it's very international. Everybody is from somewhere else. So really, if you're like the French person in New York, you don't really stand out. Whereas if you're the French person in Lawrence, Kansas, you're kind of like the exotic person, like, wow, this person's from France. And what is that like? Yeah. And so very curious. And I know I'm from Mississippi, which I would say is probably more similar to Kansas than to New York in the sense it's very sort of traditional, not so cosmopolitan. And when I would, we would go back home with my ex-husband, who is French as well, people would always just, they're like, wow, you're from France, and what is it like there? And then they would be like, parlez-vous français? And he's like, yeah, I speak French. I'm French. What do you expect? But like you said, it's good because in those smaller areas, people will, take more time and things are slower compared to in the big cities like New York, where, in English, we have that expression, a New York minute, to talk about something that goes very, very, very fast. So, right. And what about your experience in Texas? Because I think Texas is maybe the victim of a lot of stereotypes and things like that. What was your experience?
I think it was out of all of the places I've been to in the U.S., it was the one where I saw the biggest gap between kind of the stereotype and the reality of it. It's kind of like, it's okay. So it's cowboys and people.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they're very kind of, this traditional, Republican. And all of that. But the reality is, I mean, again, perhaps it was just me and my experience, but
sure.
it was not that. It was like there were a lot of people really interested in doing good, specifically in Texas. They have, I think we tend to see it as kind of, place where technology doesn't happen versus, say, California. But actually, there is a lot of deep technology that's being developed in Texas. They're aware of, specifically when it comes to global warming, the potential that they have at state level to kind of, do something about it without, of course, kind of, you want to preserve jobs and making sure that, you continue to have, you don't want to oppose basically growth, whether it's the oil and gas industry or another industry, with preserving the environment. And I think now we're at a stage with the technology development that we don't have to oppose those. And so they're ready to essentially implement, methane capture technologies, for example, and things to essentially have a lesser impact on the environment. Because as you know, Texas is kind of the Permian Basin specifically is kind of where the bulk of methane emissions come from in the U.S. And they were very, people I met there, they were genuinely, they wanted to do good. And make sure that they took steps. So I would say, it's to me, it's, and also I really like the kind of the, I would say the freedom bit of it. I mean, in terms of the conversation I had, off business, they are very free speech and kind of on these American values, at least what I see as American values of around free speech, entrepreneurship, and all of that. I love Kansas, frankly.
Yeah. Kansas or Texas?
Texas.
Maybe both. There's something to love in all the states, right? Yeah, but that is very interesting because I would, like you said, the sort of image that we have of the guy in Texas is kind of cowboy, doesn't really the environment. They're like, hey, what's that? I just want to drive my big truck and go shoot things. Which I would say, even for Americans, that's kind of the stereotype that we have of Texas as well. But like you said, depending on where you're at in Texas and who you're interacting with, that can be a very different experience. And where exactly were you in Texas?
Well, a couple of places, but I would say Austin was where I spent most time. I would say also it's very different. Say when I went to Kansas and then later on New York, I was just student and then fresh grad.
Right.
It's not the same experience you're going to have as a student and fresh grad versus you coming in as a CEO of a company, you know, doing things. It's kind of, it's different in that aspect as well.
Yeah. And Austin, Austin is the next Silicon Valley because there's so much going on there. Like you said, there's so many deep tech companies and, big industries and things like that. And a lot of, even a lot of very well-known, let's say entrepreneurs and, entrepreneurial gurus and things like Tim Ferriss and things like that have actually gone and moved to Austin. So I feel like Austin is going to be the hot place to be, if it's not already the hot place to be, So that's very interesting. So, and you said that when you go into a place as a student versus as a CEO of a company, it's not the same experience. I can say definitely, from my experience, same thing. I came to France as a student and then I built up my company. And of course you don't look at things with the same eyes. You don't have the same perspective, the same experience. Now, I'm curious to know, how did you get your business into the US? Because you went over as a student, and then did you come back to France and you created your company and you went back to the US? Or how did you get your business into the US?
Sure. Yeah, no, essentially, so from the moment where I essentially finished my MBA and I had my first job at it was called NewSpace Global. It was a New York based market analyst, kind of boutique company helping, investors do due diligence on so-called new space companies. Was kind of the upcoming space companies like SpaceX. But then essentially for the next 8 years, I didn't have much, business relationship with the US. I went back there because I had friends that I had made, from my time at Kansas. So every now and then, once a year, I would go back. Mm. But really, it started again for me when I built Absolute Sensing. And there was obviously the need for Absolute Sensing to go and help support the US in their greenhouse gas reduction plans. So specifically, there was something, regulation called the Inflation Reduction Act. And as part of that, there is essentially pots of money that, financing available to companies that want to, invest in technologies to reduce their methane emissions. And then on the other hand, for companies specifically in the oil and gas industry that, don't do enough, then they pay a tax. And so my company is there to help measure, which player is emitting what amount of emissions, and as a result, calculate kind of potential tax or, on the other hand, incentives, kind of financial incentives, because they were good players. So it started back in, I would say, first business trip specifically on this topic was about a year and a half ago.
Okay. Yeah.
And it went really quickly.
I was going to say, so I was like, wow, that sounds like things went really fast. But I think that's what a lot of people say about business in the US is that it goes pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, I would differentiate though between kind of the, government timeframe and then the commercial timeframe. These are not the same.
They all countries that, there's public and there's private and they don't quite run on the same schedules.
Yeah. Although I must say, I mean, I was expecting a lot more, red tape in the US. But actually, it went quite smoothly. So, when it comes to specifically this topic of methane emission monitoring via satellite, there are a couple of federal agencies that are on the topic. There is NASA, of course. There is NOAA. There is the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency as well. So, meeting them and understanding, what they wanted from us as a provider of data, that process took a good part of a year. But it was very smooth. And I think one of the things we did well was that early on, I realized that it was very important to have a partner there in that of a U.S. citizen that would be able to kind of bridge between us and our American counterparts.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, even if I've been there and you know, my English is kind of okay, there is still this element of, you know, you're not a U.S. citizen.
Right. You're not the insider. You kind of need that insider to guide you. And just a question about that, the person or the agent, was it like a single person or perhaps a company that you contracted with to?
It was a single person. It's a single person.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And that person, were they familiar with, I don't know, France or Europe or just snow, but they were willing to explain to you, this is how we do things here in the U.S.?
Yeah, not really. That person wasn't really particularly, I would say, fluent in terms of understanding the cultural differences between, say, France and the U.S. However, it was a big expert on that topic, the business topic of, you know, methane emissions and then navigating the federal agencies' relation between, you know, state level and federal level, all of that stuff, which I think is very important for a company that does, like ours, that does business to business, and then a big portion of the B is government business. So that's why I thought this would be kind of the critical path in terms of it would be slow to engage with our government counterparts in the U.S. So we started this process of getting that person on board fairly quickly. And on the contrary, on the commercial side of things, we didn't really need that because we could just have direct one-on-one conversations with companies that are interested in monitoring their methane emissions, and it was very fast just by the nature of companies being more agile than
there's lots of, you know, procedures and paperwork and perhaps layers of, you know, in the approval process and things like that. And in the commercial relationships that you had with the American companies, what were the things that were surprising, shocking, unexpected in those relationships? And it could be positive or negative, but, you know, compared to if you were doing business perhaps with a company here in France, any big differences that you noticed?
Well, I guess what was most shocking was that there wasn't really many differences. I was expecting French company. What's that about?
And right.
But really, no, it was kind of very smooth. So I would say that one thing that's important is to show that you have a real plan for getting into the U.S.
Right.
And showing your customers that you're not kind of this, you know, cold calling them and it's going to be a one-off transaction and you're trying to rip their eyes off. It's really a long-term thing. And for us, the American play really is a long-term play. We intend to invest quite a bit of money into the U.S. I think it's about once you get the initial trust going, then it's very similar to experience I would have with, say, a French French company. There are still, I would say, nuances in terms of, you know, slight cultural differences that, you know, pops up every now and then, but it's very minor.
Right, sure. And for the question of, you know, building trust, because that is a question that I get very often, like, how do I build trust with my American clients or my American prospects? Was there anything that you remembered that you did, or how did you do that, actually? How did you win their trust?
Well, for us, I guess maybe it's very business specific, but it was about first showing that we're working a lot with the scientific community and the regulators, and that basically we kind of, you know, they've looked at our technology and there is kind of this validation that we're not, you know, that we're legit. So I think that was the biggest part. Because obviously, you know, for them, it's, you know, if the regulators and the science community says these guys are legit, we're going to you know, put them on this list of companies that can do monitoring of methane emissions,
right,
then it's kind of that's the step one. That's kind of the prerequisites for doing business with these companies. But I would say then that building trust, I mean, one of the things that's different between how, at least, again, my experience of building relationship with the U.S. versus a French person is that a French person will not trust you initially. Then it will be your job to show them that you can be trustworthy.
Right.
Versus almost all of the interactions I had with and still friends I have in the U.S., they trusted me initially.
Right.
And then it was like, you know, if you screw up, then that's going to go away.
Right.
But I think that the trust level initially, right at the start of the relationship, is just a way higher.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that's what I always tell people, that, you know, that's one of the big differences is that in France, people are going to be a little wary of you to start, and then you've got to win their trust. Whereas in the U.S., people, until they don't have a reason to trust you, they're going to trust you pretty much. Yeah, right. Very interesting. Yeah, very interesting. Which is, I think, positive because it means that kind of opens the door for you to show them that they can continue trusting and that maybe it's a bit easier to build up that relationship. Speaking of relationships, you mentioned NASA. Now, NASA is, I think, very impressive for a lot of people. You know, it's kind of, we think of NASA putting a man on the moon and things like that. How did you actually get to meet NASA or someone from NASA?
Well, it was really a natural process. So we were invited at a workshop organized by Harvard University as part of this group of experts in satellite-based methane monitoring.
Okay.
And there were people from NASA. And so we essentially started off engaging there. And then I would say the space industry is very small in that, you know, everyone tends to know each
right.
other. It's not like there's, you know, millions of companies,
right? Yeah.
Serious companies. So it was pretty smooth. But then, you know, we had a bilab between the U.S. and France organized by a respective delegation. And so I was invited as part of this bilateral. Okay. So it was like 2 months ago now.
Right.
And so there I got to meet actually my counterparts that I had been discussing with over the phone the past, you know, 18 months. And it's also very important, I think, is that we tend to, you know, in this kind of post-COVID area, era, you know, not put enough importance on face-to-face meeting. And I think it's very important. There's only so much rapport you can build, you know, via phone call. So.
Right. Yeah. Over the phone or over a Zoom call or things like that. And it's, no, I agree. And and it's that, I think that also goes to show, you know, just how powerful, you know, getting out there and meeting people and networking can be. I mean, it can get you, you know, contacts in these big, industry, you know, companies such as, you know, or institutions rather, like NASA or NOAA and things like that. Yeah, right. Okay. So, were there any mistakes that you made along the way in getting into the U.S. or once you were there that you would like to share with us just so we can, you know, learn from, it's always good to learn from mistakes. Any that you made that you want to share with us?
I think we made tons of mistakes, and we're still making mistakes to this day.
Don't we all? Don't we all?
So, yeah, but I'm trying to think one in particular that would be helpful. I mean, I guess not having not having someone there, like physically present, like
right.
a consultant that eventually. You know, we onboarded. It essentially, the first 6 months of interaction without that person were kind of wasted.
Okay,
I would say
right.
I would definitely recommend any business that, you know, has really B2B focus to very much try and start, you know, figuring out, you know, finding someone that can be of help in understanding, you know, the ecosystem in the US, right. and then putting having the right network to put you in touch with the right person. So, you know, that I would say was very important. Now, obviously, there is the element of how do you find that person?
Right.
And to me, it was kind of very nice that I had done my MBA in the US because then, you know, via this network, I was able to get, you know, someone who knew that person.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, so there is that. So I would say, you know, maybe a tip is if you can spend, you know, even a year or even like 6 months in the US as part of your college degree or whatever, do it. If you're French or European, particularly if you're French, because I think there is this love-hate relationship between our countries.
Definitely.
So yeah, that would be my advice.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's really good. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of times, you know, what I've seen is people start off and they think, you know, I can do this on my own. I can do it alone, et cetera. Whether it's because they don't know who to reach out to. Maybe they don't have the budget to take on someone as a consultant or a sort of a partner or something like that. Or they just think, no, I've done my business for 10 years here in France. I can do it myself over there. But I think that's, like you said, trying to do that alone is you're going to waste, you said, maybe that first 6 months, and as time is money. So,
it's particularly important, I think, in the recent times with kind of this emphasis, both in the US and in France as well, and in a number of countries of kind of, you know, national interest first, you know, Buy American right. Act, say in the US, and then we've got some sort of an equivalent in France. You want to be able to have, you know, to understand what that actually translates into.
Right.
Into your industry and, and how, you know, kind of what's the impact for you. And really, when you get there, you understand, you know, actually it's not that big of a deal as long as you do it the proper way.
Right.
And you partner with, you know, in our case, we partner with US companies as well. And so, I think it's really important to have, you know, really someone there quickly and then kind of grow from there.
Yeah, right. Kind of, you know, bridge the gap there. And yeah, very interesting. Okay, great. And just to finish up, is there anything that you or your company are looking for now that you would like to throw out there and see if maybe that message lands in the right ears?
Well, I would say we're always looking to recruit great people. So that's one thing. At the end of the day, a company is... It's people working together to achieve a goal that they believe in. So I think if you know there are people that think global warming is really an issue and something that they wanna help tackle, then send over your resume.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I would say as I said, we're planning on expanding in the US. That will require investment. So if people also want to help with the investment part, we're also interested in any financial partners in that regard.
All right, great. Yeah, great. And so if someone wants to perhaps check out your company, send over their resume, look into investing in your company, how can they find you and how can they connect with you?
So it's very simple. They just go online. So our website, www.absolutesensing.com, and then, you know, go to the careers website and you'll find an email address. So that or just via LinkedIn, really. So, we met over LinkedIn. I tend to, I receive quite a lot of resume via LinkedIn, which I can send over to smart people in my team who can look over them.
Okay, great. And yeah, and I'll put the links to your website, to that careers page, and the link to your LinkedIn profile so that anybody who's listening and they want to reach out, it just makes that very easy to do. All right.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, Tristan. Have a lovely day. And very interesting. Thank you for sharing your story, your experience, and talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Christina. Have a good one.